My name is Sam Clements, and welcome to the Picture House Podcast. This is a special mini edition of the show where my esteemed colleague Sarah Cook talks to legendary actor Mark Gatiss about his role in Yorgos Lanthimos's new film, The Favourite, in cinemas now. I saw The Favourite over the Christmas holidays and I loved it. It stars Olivia Colman, Emma Stone, Rachel Weisz, and yes, Mark Gatiss. And Mark was in town for the film's UK premiere at the London Film Festival, and Sarah went along to have a little chat with him about the movie. So without further ado, I'll pass over to Sarah Cook and Mark Gatiss.
How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
I believe a happy birthday for yesterday is in order.
Yes, yes. God. You know, I was working, was rehearsing yesterday, and it's kind of, it is nice to do something, because otherwise you just forget what you did. So I get, there are, you know, the last 10 years I can remember certain birthdays because I was working, doing something. The ones when I wasn't and I went somewhere for a treat, nothing, blurs, nothing. And it goes so quickly, I can't stand it.
How are you feeling about bringing The Favourite to the BFI London Film Festival?
Well, delighted. I haven't seen it yet. So I gather it's very good. And I had a great time making it, so I'm very excited to see it. I really am. It's a nice treat.
Yeah.
You know, people often think that, you know, people turn up for things and then say, I can't wait, go through the doors and then out the back to their favourite restaurant, which a lot of people do. But that's usually when they've seen it 15 times or something. So I'm very excited about seeing it.
Oh, it's definitely my favourite of the festival so far.
Oh, great.
I watched it this morning and I can't wait to watch it again.
Good, good.
So what drew you to this project? It's amazing.
Cash. No, well, Yorgos, my agent sent me an email saying Yorgos Lanthimos wanted to meet me. So I had a cup of tea with him, discovered that he was a huge fan of Nighty Night, of all things. And we talked a bit about that. And now I'm to the third interview. I'm going to remember this properly because I've totally switched this round. What I did was I put myself on tape for it. And then obviously Yorgos liked it. And then I met him. That's right. God, that's frightening. I've literally change that in my mind. So it's better for me. So then I met Yorgos and he asked me if I wanted to do it. And I'd seen The Lobster and I thought he was fascinating and very funny. And I loved the script. And it's a period I knew a little about, but it's not much done. So I thought it was really interesting to do. And I said yes.
I mean, because you have a black comedy, dark comedy, absurdist comedy background. Did you guys bond over the kind of...
Well, I mean, he's a fascinating man. He's about 15 years younger than me, but he somehow feels older, I thought. He has a sort of old soul, and he's very dry, a very dry sense of humour. Kind of, he's a very funny man. I liked him immediately. He's got a sort of unknowable quality to him. And he said, this is the first thing I've done that there's someone else's script, and I was just very drawn to the story and the material, and I want to do something different with it. And I think that's what it felt like. It wasn't just a sort of stately period film. It's an unusual period and not much done, and the story of the three women is really remarkable.
And how much research did you do after you got the role into John Churchill? And his...
Well, as I said, I knew a little bit. I did 18th century history at A level. So Churchill and that relationship, I knew a little bit about all this, everything around it, and the bedpan conspiracy, the warming pan conspiracy and all that sort of stuff, and Queen Anne's miscarriages and stuff. It's very sad story. But, you know, I thought, I'm not in it very much, but I know who Marlborough was, and obviously the Churchill antecedents and everything is quite interesting. But mostly it's about the fact that Mrs. Churchill was running the country.
Yeah.
And she was an incredible woman. She was incredible. And then that, as soon as Abigail starts to get her clutches on the Queen's affections, how rapidly that can change. And what I find fascinating about that is it is endlessly applicable to our times. You know?
Yeah.
Power bases shift, whether in politics or in personal life, you know, people fall in and out of favour, whether with monarchs or presidents, and you're suddenly out.
Yeah.
And everything changes, you know. And someone who looks like they're absolutely, you know, irreplaceable, or is so powerful can suddenly find them, everyone just turns their back on them and it's over. You know, yeah. I think that's really interesting.
It definitely does come through. I find interesting about your character and Rachel Weisz's character is that there seems to be a kind of hidden secret with him as well. He has this like flippant line to her before he goes off to war. Is it like one of those show marriages where they both have kind of like repressed feelings for the similar sexes and they're doing it for...
No, I think in real life they were quite a devoted couple. I think it was a very happy, very successful marriage. I think they were a sort of power couple, really. But there isn't a sense that she was sort of wearing the trousers and he was the front man. I mean, he was a brilliant general. I think they were really well matched, you know. But yeah, I think he completely knew what he'd signed up for and how powerful she was and how it's a bit like sort of in a way because of their huge influence on the Queen, they were essentially running the country, but and she took care of home while he went off to do the foreign office, as it were. So she was Home Secretary, Prime Minister, and he was the Foreign Secretary. But I don't know. I don't know. I've not seen it yet, so there might be things that you've seen. I haven't.
Very true. Yeah. He comes home and then they're ousted. Really?
Yes, and then it's over. Yeah. then the wig comes off.
And the wig comes off. Yeah. What I enjoy about The Favourite is it does bring about a kind of modern comedy aspect to period dramas. Mm. And I think they're very crucial to the British film industry, like our black comedy and our deadpan humour, as well as our period dramas.
Well, it's a nice combination.
It's a very nice combination.
It's the two things we do very well, I suppose.
Yeah, and you do quite a few of them. I mean, you did Christopher Robin earlier this year as well. How do you feel of these genres on our impact of British film, and why do we love them so much?
Well, I mean, there's always period dramas we've always traditionally done very well. It seems like, you know, one of the it's our sort of stock in trade, isn't it? The danger is that they become a sort of cliche, that people think that's what we do. 28 part dramas about the Raj, or something, you know, linen suits and floppy fringes, and that's, but there's nothing to them.
Yeah.
You know, whereas obviously the best ones are astonishing, I think, that those, the scale of Lawrence of Arabia or Room with a View and Remains of the Day, things like that. You know, the easy cliche is that they're sort of easy on the eye and easy on the mind, and they're absolutely not. The ones that aren't those films can be a bit like that, a bit sort of stodgy and, you know, just lots of people in hired frocks.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is something we've always done very well. And equally, obviously, our comedies are world famous. So I think there's something about this film, which there's something raw about it and sort of dirty, and which feels somehow it's got that Barry Lyndon quality to it of earthiness and naturalism, and we shot it in natural light and stuff like that. So that was very interesting. Not really the sort of same attention to perfect makeup and costume as you usually get. If costumes got dirty, they were sort of left dirty and stuff like that. And then equally, it's got this strand of sort of porky humour, which makes it feel also part of another lineage, doesn't it? I think.
Yeah, it was wonderfully done. Did you think that Yorgos being an outside, I guess obviously from Greece, did that help change up and shift up period drama, British?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he did say to me when we were filming at Hatfield House, he said, I think their original hope was that they wouldn't go to some of these familiar locations. I've filmed there about 300 times myself, just a different frock. And I think that was the plan, but, you know, just inevitable budget restrictions, etc. But I think his eye is so particular, it doesn't feel like just another setting for a period drama. But yes, I think there's a lot to be said for that. You know, it's about like James Ivory.
Yeah.
James Ivory made the most intensely British films of the 80s, and he's an American and he has a different eye on things. And Yorgos has a very particular, rather eccentric eye. So I think bringing that to bear on the story of Queen Anne and Sarah Churchill is inevitably is a slightly skewed look to how it might have been done if it was a six-parter on Sunday night.
You know? Yeah, definitely. You mentioned frocks there. What I love about the Stuarts is the costuming is just as extravagant as the women's for men. How was the costuming and wearing the wigs and the tight outfits and the...
Well, it's quite... I mean, I'm in uniform most of the time. It's hot. I mean, thank God we weren't filming at the hottest time of the year, but it is a relief to get them off. And But there's also something great about it. I mean, you know, Nick Holt is really peacocking in it, and there's something glorious about those. I've played a couple of fops, and it's just so much fun to do. And then there's also that sort of exaggeration to it, because we sort of know it mostly from cartoons.
Yeah.
So it's hard to avoid that sort of Gilray exaggeration, sort of stretchiness. Everyone looks pointy and sharp-edged, yeah, and their wigs are far too big, and everyone has sort of rouge and stuff like that. So it does change you. And, you know, once I have heels on and a wig, I'm about 25 feet tall. So it changes how you stand and everything. And it's a big part of it. But also, you know, the Sandy Powell's costumes are gorgeous and made specifically, mm-hmm, which makes a huge difference. So, you know, you can start to... I mean, Rachel looks incredible. She's like a little, like a sort of wasp at, yeah, times, the way she... And she looks sort of tightly bound and steely and ruthless. And then Olivia's... Because the Queen had terrible trouble with her legs and weeping bandages and all that sort of stuff. So she looks like an unmade bed,
yeah,
at times, you know. It's a huge part of it, I think. And it helps both to make you feel like you're in a different time, but also by being so lived in that they're not just a sort of series of shop window dummies.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's an air of preposterousness to the palace, including duck racing.
Yes. Yes.
How was the duck racing?
Well, it was a late change because it was supposed to be cockfighting. I had the line, gentlemen, shall we get our cocks out? Which sadly had to go. I couldn't think of a duck equivalent. I was trying to see if there was anything I could snuggle in. but it seems authentic. I don't think it is at all. It just feels like the sort of thing they would have done. It was great fun. It was quite trying in the end because we spent hours with the smell of tuna fish and duck shit. But it was fun. I mean, we just sort of did it, really. In the end, we were just sort of placing bets on ducks and cheering them around. And I mean, they never want to do, you know, I've done a lot of things with animals, my God. And it's completely true because they have a mind of their own and they don't want to do what you want them to do, even the ones who are supposed to have been trained to do it.
Yeah.
And they're called Indian runners. They're an actual duck that does run. And they look like umbrella handles. They're so... curious, but really it's like, you know, you open the cage, out they come, off you go, and they just stand there or just and they were very properly comical, they were. And then obviously someone is running in front of them with bits of fish and then suddenly they're off. And it was really funny, but we did a whole day on it, and then about 3 months later we had to go back and do it again because we didn't have enough shots. And it was like, oh God, not the ducks again. But I'm sure it's worked out very well.
Oh, it's a brilliant opener. Okay. It is. It's very silly and just kind of palace life. Yeah, I mean, there must, yeah, have been so much, there seems to be so much boredom in a palace that they do ridiculous things.
I think that's inevitable. I mean, it's an interesting thing. I'm doing a Manus of George III in rehearsals at the moment, and George III's court was internationally renowned for its dullness because he was such, before he went, before his illness, he was such a stickler for rules and a sort of meat and potatoes man. He liked Handel, so they only listened to Handel. People weren't allowed to sit down in front of him. They would fall, they would wilt with boredom. So I'm sure that was the case in a lot of the courts, really, apart from the, like Henry VIII one, the sort of lively ones, where, but then that the danger was if you got your head cut. But I think some of the, you know, outside of the actual, the absolute heart of power, if you were a, you know, second footman, you probably saw the Queen about once every 3 months, and then everything, and then the rest of it would just be like, oh God. But if you were found to be off duty,
yeah,
the way that, you know, when people are always trying to distract guardsmen,
yeah,
you know. It's a big problem if you drop your concentration, and yet, God, it must be so difficult to keep it.
See, it makes you think of what antics they get up to at Buckingham Palace.
Well, I think we know some of the things.
Any duck racing?
Well, you never know.
That might be the nicest thing.
I think they just have babies. They seem to just have babies.
And there's a lot of good British talent, and of course, formidable Emma Stone and yourself included. What's it like in that creativity space of all these amazing talents?
All I can say, we just had a really nice time, you know. I spent most of my time with James Smith, who was delightful. We had a really good laugh, duck racing and everything else. But literally, the read-through was just after Emma had won the Oscar for La La Land, and it was palpably exciting. We were all excited. But she was such a lovely woman, completely down to earth. This is the third thing I've done with Rachel Weisz, and I know Olivia a little. So it was very nice, very good fun, you know, and that's all you can ask for, you know. Why anybody would do anything for any other reason, I don't know. If you're not having a good time, then why get out of bed?
Stephanie does look like a lot of fun. Definitely did come across. I have a final question. I know there's a lot in the works. What have you got coming up next?
Well, I'm doing George III in 2 weeks. I've just come down from rehearsals for today. This is my break day to do something totally different. Got the pictures. I'm back up to Nottingham tomorrow morning. And then we have 2 more weeks and then we open. And then I'm off finally for a bit in order to complete pre-production on Dracula, which we start shooting next year. 390 minutes for
That's very exciting. Well, thank you so much talking to me today. And I hope you enjoy The Favourite for the first time.
Can't wait.
Thank you.
I've heard all sorts about it.